Good evening. It is a pleasure. It is a gift from God to be together this evening. And I pray that as faith has brought you here, that faith will add to your life what the Lord would have be added to your life through His Word tonight. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to be here to speak to you. That from faith to faith, as you have engaged yourself on Wednesday evenings in the consideration of those that I suppose some would call the hall of faith there in Hebrews chapter 11. You read about all those people and you say, yeah, I can see the faith in Abraham, and I can see the faith in these other people that are mentioned and the wonderful things they do. And then we get to verse 32, and it says, what more shall I say? It says, for time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, and Samson. Jephthah, Samson we've heard of. Then he goes on to talk about David. Of course, we know who David is and what he did, and Samuel and the prophets. But Samson, a hero of faith? Now, in Sunday school, how many remember all the stories about Samson? Of course you do, right? If there's a character that has been more drawn in illustrations, in art, and portrayed in many different ways and in different things, people that know nothing about the Bible, they know who Samson is. But a hero of faith. Well, the writer of Hebrews considers Samson to be a hero of faith. And it's my goal tonight to help you see that from weakness, Samson was made strong. If you look down through the script, the text here, it says, who by faith conquered kingdoms, verse 33, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign enemies to flight. In that list, which seems to fit Samson? Well, my choice was from weakness, he was made strong. Samson, from his weaknesses, the weaknesses of the flesh, the weaknesses of the man, was made strong, spiritually strong in the Lord. You know, the list of the people here would have been a short list if the criteria were perfection of the flesh. Wouldn't it have been a short list? Think about Abraham. Abraham was brought up here in the list first place. And you've probably already have addressed some of the shortcomings of Abraham. Moses was a murderer, among other things. Samson. If you would turn to Judges, beginning in chapter 13 through chapter 16 of Judges, contains the story of Samson. And these pages tell more about Samson's weaknesses than they do about anything about Samson. But there's more about it than his weaknesses here. You know, there's more about Samson than any other judges that we have record of. Judges chapter 13 tell of Samson's parents. They tell of the mission that Samson was to have. That Samson, that the man of son, as he was called. If you would look in verse 5. This is the angel of the Lord speaking to Samson's mother. Manoah's wife heard this, for behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son. No razor shall come upon his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. He shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. That's the mission. And the rest of chapter 13 continues to talk about the interaction between Samson's parents and the angel of the Lord. And it culminates here in verses 24 and 25 with Samson's birth. It says, "Then the woman gave birth to a son and named him Samson, and the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him." And listen to this. "And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahan Dan between Zorah and Eshtol." The Spirit of the Lord began to stir the young man Samson. Stirring up. Sometimes we need to be stirred up. And verse chapter 14 begins with Samson responding to the stirring up. It says, "Then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines." So he came back and he told his father and mother, said, "I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me as a wife." And so it begins. He saw a woman. Samson went down to Timnah, which wasn't very far away. It was a village, probably like walking from here to, Old Summit or so. And he saw a woman. This will be the first of the three times that it says that he saw. One of the weaknesses of Samson is the weaknesses of any and many young men. When you're young and you're full of vigor, and you look, I remember the first time I saw Miriam. I looked. I didn't know much about her. Samson didn't know much about the girl in Timnah, did he? But he looked. And he went back to Dad and said, "I have seen a woman and I want her. Get her for me." And you look at the verses and it says in verse 3, "Then his father and mother," he said to him, "Is there no woman among the daughters of your relatives or even among our people that you go and take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she looks good to me." She looks good to me. This is God working with the man's weaknesses. Samson is flesh. He has been called by God as a Nazarite from the very birth, which means that he would never touch anything from the grape. Nothing unclean would ever enter his body. He wouldn't touch anything unclean, and he would never cut his hair. But he was a man of flesh. And God is working with him. And you see in verse 4, as God works out his purposes, it says, "However, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines." The Lord was seeking an occasion against the Philistines in his man Samson. And he was allowing the weaknesses of Samson and the inclinations of a young man to lead his purposes, for it to lead God's purposes to the Philistines, so God would work things out according to his will. You see, God has not left his purpose, even if this man is controlled by the weaknesses of the flesh. Continuing on, here's our first look at the man's strength. When you read the account, then Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came as far as the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came roaring towards him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily so that he tore him as one tears a young goat. Though he had nothing in his hand, but he did not tell his father and mother what he had done. So our first look at this young man's strength. So you have to use your imaginary here just a little bit. So they're headed down to Timnah. They come down to the vineyards. As far as the vineyards there, and so for whatever reason, Samson steps aside into the vineyard, and a young lion attacks him. I don't know what you imagine. Do you imagine a young male lion? Is that what the image in your mind of Samson is alone, and a young male lion comes rushing out of the vineyard and jumps on Samson. And I imagine that Samson, in self-defense, what would you do? If a lion jumped on you, anybody ever sat in a deer stand or a ground blind and imagined a mountain lion prowling about? But what would you do? Ah! Wouldn't you? And you'd grab the lion, and Samson tore the lion. I don't know, because the Scripture doesn't allow me to know, if Samson was aware of his incredible strength before that moment. But if you look at the account, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, in a flash, in an instant. When that lion was in the air and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and he just tore the lion. He didn't tell his parents. I don't know if Samson was surprised about the event. I can't tell that. So he went down and he talked to the woman. And she looked good to Samson. So, it is the third time that we've heard this. For the third time, on closer examination, she looked good to Samson. Samson, one of his weaknesses was to see, and to want, and to take. And it leads him to this woman. And when, as the verse says, and when he returned to take her, he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the body of the lion. So he scraped the honey into his hands, and he went on eating as he went. And when he came to his father and mother, he gave some of them, and they ate it. But he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey out of the body of the lion. This tells the record of the first time on record that we have, that an Israelite actually tasted the honey from the land flowing with milk and honey. I didn't really think about this until I looked at this account and studied it. How many times have you heard about the land of flowing with milk and honey? It just led them on and on. This is the first time that we actually have that someone tasted the honey. How many of you have ever grabbed a honeycomb and tasted fresh honey right out of the comb? It's a treat. It really is a treat. So we're beginning to get an image or a picture of the man Samson. He's given to some of the youthful passions that many are. Verses 10 and 18 you know well. Because of the many times that you've heard the story that Samson goes down and he puts on a feast. He's given 30 companions. Samson charges them and gives them a riddle to solve regarding the lion and the honey. And then there are threats to Samson's bride. The companions, in order to exercise the riddle out of Samson, threaten this young woman that Samson has fallen for. And they tell her, if you don't get it out of Samson, we are going to burn you and your father's house to the ground. And then there's the betrayal. And time would fail us if we read the whole account. But the bride is weeping for the entire 7 day of feast. And I don't know if there's any one thing that I cannot stand, but if you look at the text, verse 16 of chapter 14, Samson's wife wept before him and said, "You only hate me and you do not love me. You have propounded a riddle to the sons of my people and have not told it to me." And he said to her, "Behold, I have not told it to my father or mother, so should I tell you?" However, she wept before him 7 days while their feast lasted, and on the seventh day he told her because she pressed him so hard. Then she told the riddle to the sons of her people. If there's one thing that really gets to me, and I shouldn't admit this in front of Miriam, but she did it just last night. She didn't mean to do it. She wasn't trying to get anything out of me. But if she really wants to get to you, it's not the nagging, it's not the reminding, that's what I meant to say. It is the weeping. It's the crying. And this young man loves this girl. He does. I think you'll find out. He loves her, and here she is weeping the whole time. And so he tells her, and the woman that he loves betrays him and tells the riddle to the companions, and you know what happens. I pray that you knew in advance. Did they know in advance that we were going to talk about Samson tonight? I won't have everybody raise their hand that read the story in advance, but I bet you'll know what next week's is, so I suggest read that in advance. We just don't have time to read four chapters. But the Spirit of the Lord came, verse 19, upon Samson mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of the men. And he took their spoils and gave the changes of clothes to those who told the riddle, and his anger burned, and he went up to his father's house. What weakness is God working with in Samson at this point? What weakness is it? Tolerance? No. Anger? I saw some of you answer the question. His anger. It says in the verse, if you'll look at it, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down and he did this. And when he had done that, his anger burned, and he went up to his father's house. Who wouldn't be angry? Your young wife has betrayed you. You have just killed 30 men. Your father-in-law has been threatened. And everything in this young man's life is not turning out the way it should. It says in verse 20, but Samson's wife was given to his companions who had been, his companion who had been his friend. And so we have Samson sulking back home in his anger. Let me point out to you that verse 20 was not Samson's doing. Verses 14 and 14 was not Samson's doing. It was the Philistines who threatened his wife with burning her and her father's house down. Chapter 15 and verse 6 is not Samson's doing. When the Philistines heard what it was that brought Samson back, they burned Samson's father-in-law and Samson's wife to the ground. God will deal with them, and He's going to begin to deal with the Philistines through Samson. In chapters 15, 7 and 8, after the Philistines killed the father-in-law and the wife, it says, Samson said to them, since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that I will quit. He struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Edom. A man in grief, but not out of control. You ever had everything go really bad? You ever have everything go really, really bad? He had lost his wife. He can't go home anymore. You ever removed yourself from the work that's before you just because of the way things have gone? And that's what Samson has done. And you go into hiding. Samson went and lived in the rock of Edom, where the wild animals lived and no man would go. And he put himself into seclusion because everything had gone wrong. Everything that could go wrong had gone wrong. I don't know if you've ever been there. I've been there. You ever been in the rock? Been in the cleft of the rock of Edom? Where you've removed yourself from the work? You have backed off to the point where no one really knows where you are. And after a while, no one seems to care. It's no place to be. And glory to God, we see in the story that God doesn't leave Samson there in the cleft of the rock of Edom. But this thought just kind of occurred to me. No one went to find him. It took God bringing the Philistine army over into Israel and for them to tell the Israelite army, we're going to destroy you unless you bring us Samson. It took God to bring Samson out of the rock. Do you know anybody in the rock? In the cleft? Maybe you ought to go help them. Maybe you ought to go find them. Maybe you ought to bring them out. When God does come calling, and He uses the Israelites, He uses the Philistines in this case, I want you to know this about Samson. The scriptures here are very clear. In verse 9 of chapter 15, when the Philistines went up and they camped in Judah and they spread out, the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We have come up to bind Samson in order to do to him as he did to us." And then 3,000 of the men of Judah went up to the rock of Edom, the cleft of the rock of Edom, and they told Samson. And Samson said, and they said, "We want to bind you and we want to take you down and we want to give you to the Philistines." Samson was the only Israelite in all of Israel who believed that God was still the God of all creation. Samson was the only one who knew that there was a God of Israel that still existed and cared about them. No one else in Israel would do this. All of the others in Israel, they arrayed themselves against the Philistines, but did no battle. But Samson does. Samson was a man of faith who allowed himself to be bound, to be brought out of the rock and brought down to the Philistines. And verse 14, "And when he came to Leah, the Philistines shouted as they met him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on him, on his arms, were as flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, so that he reached out and he took and he killed 1,000 men with it." And then Samson said, "With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men." And when he had finished speaking, he threw the jawbone from his hand and he named that place Ramath Leh. And then he became very thirsty. And he called to the Lord and he said, "You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" And look what God does for him. "But God split the hollow place that is in Leah, so that the water came out of it. And when he drank, his strength returned and he revived." Samson. God's army of one, when he is through with the Philistines, has exhausted himself to the point of death. And he calls out to his Lord, and his Lord answers him. In Samson's words, a servant of the Lord. Verse 20 says, "So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines." Nothing more said about Samson being a judge. But a lot can happen in 20 years, can't it? There is no record of the 20 years that Samson judged the Philistines. But a lot can happen in 20 years. But another thing is true. Very little can happen if you let it. Very little can happen if you let it. And I say that because despite the silence about Samson's judgment for 20 years, him being a judge in Israel, when you look at the next verses, beginning in chapter 16, something happens. And I think that this section is one of the most important parts for us to understand Samson's place in the purposes of God in the life of Israel in Judges. Samson had slaughtered and defended and revenged the people of God against the Philistines single-handedly. And no one came to his aid. When he slaughtered, when he broke his bounds and he was dying of thirst, only God was there to aid him. And you look at the verse, and no matter what we may decide about the moral character of Samson in these next few verses, try your very best to put yourself in Samson's world for a moment. He was surrounded in, he was from the family of Dan, surrounded by a bunch of idol worshippers, and I'm talking about the people of Israel. And their neighbors were the Philistines who ruled over them. I imagine that morality had slipped a bit in their life. It says, now Samson, in chapter 16, verse 1, went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. You and I know nothing about what happened. Is that fair enough? But what's important is this. Samson, by himself, went to Gaza. In the statement we just read, the most important part of that is that Samson, the judge of Israel, who had judged Israel for 20 years or thereabouts, I don't know where in his judgment this was, but he went to Gaza. Gaza was the town, Gaza was the city that the Philistines had the temple in, where Dagon, their god, had the temple, and that's where their god reigned. And Samson went to Gaza, of all the places. The enemy of the Philistines, the arch enemy, the one they hated, the one that they wanted to get their hands on and to crush, went to Gaza. It just so happened he saw a prostitute. And instead of just standing out there by the gate, which he could have done, and become very conspicuous. Do you think Samson was conspicuous? I don't know. How conspicuous would an Israelite be with that had never cut his hair? By this time he was probably 40 years old. He had 7 locks of hair that had never been cut. He goes into a prostitute's house. And the judge of Israel is in the lair of the enemy. Whatever happened, he laid there till midnight. When you look at the verses, and when it was told to the Gazites, I guess that's what you call people who live in Gaza, the Gazites, saying, Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. And they kept silent all night, saying, let us wait until the morning light, then we will kill him. Now Samson lay until midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the 2 posts, and pulled them up along with the bars, then put them on his shoulders, and he carried them up to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Hebron. He arose at midnight. Whatever it was that caused Samson to get up, whether it was his conscious, whether it was the Lord, he got up at midnight when they were not expecting it, and he went to the city gates, which is very important, and Samson removed the doors of the gate by grabbing the bar of the gates, these doors, and pulling them out of the ground and putting them on his shoulder. This would be a little more effective if I was big like one of you guys. And he carried these uncarable doors up to the mountain that was opposite Hebron. So in the morning, the doors of the gate could be seen in Gaza. The gates to Gaza were gone by the judge of Israel, who was the only one who had the faith to defend the honor of the God of Israel. And so in the morning light, you could look up from Gaza and you could see the gates. And think of the talk. In Hebron, which would be where the Danites lived, the talk would very quickly, you know how things get around, very quickly, off in the east, they would look and say, "What's on that mountain?" Because they could see it from Israel. Samson was the only one who had the faith that God was still the God of his people, and that God's purposes would be done. And Samson did it. And Samson did it. I suppose that's what the judge of Israel does in this story. In chapter 16, verse 4 begins the story of Samson's final act from weakness made strong. Delilah lives in this valley of Sorek. This valley is the border between the Philistines and the Danites, or the Israelites, in this case, the Danites. And you know the story. The story ends with Samson getting a haircut and Delilah becoming very wealthy, right? That's how it ends. That's how the story winds up. In chapter 16, verse 20, she said to Samson, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he woke up from his sleep and said, "I will go out as at other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. This is the consequence of Samson's weakness for looking, wanting, and taking. Samson did not get a pass for his sin. You know that? He didn't get a pass. When Samson awoke, verse 20 is perhaps one of the scariest statements in the whole account, maybe in the entire Bible. Samson was ready for action, but he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Sin will take you further than you want to go. Sin will leave you longer than you want to stay. And it'll cost you more than you want to pay. Sin is going to take you further than you want to go. It's going to leave you there longer than you want to stay, and it's going to cost you more than you want to pay. Samson didn't get a pass. And so the Philistines grab Samson, they bind him, they gouge his eyes out. They take him to Gaza, back to Gaza, the city of the Philistines, where the God Dagon lives, so to speak, where the temple is. And they put him in the prison, grinding grain, like a common, everyday criminal. His eyes gone, day after day, grinding grain. The servant of God has a lot of time to think. And I think, as I've looked at it, a lot of time to repent. I envision Samson with his hair gone and his eyes just holes, pushing this bar to grind this grain day after day after day in the dark, thinking, contemplating his life. Since time does not allow, we won't go through the verses 23 through 27, because I want you to see that in verse 28 and 30, there's within God's story that His will and His righteousness and His judgment will go forward. The Philistines decide to throw a great party. They're going to celebrate the capture of Samson, and they're going to lift up their God in the temple of Dagon, and they're going to make fun of Samson and bring Samson out and make a big deal out of it. And so all of the nobles are there, all of the military leaders are there. If you're anybody in the Philistine, the world of the Philistines, you are there. It says there's 3,000 just on the roof alone. Verse 28, then Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me. Please strengthen me just this time, O God, that I may avenge at once, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. Yeah, the story of God's will going forward is also the story of a lone, single man. The story of a man who has come to himself before God. A servant of God, a Nazarite, but a man with a broken and a contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. And he does not. Samson is a story of weakness and giftedness, of being disciplined by God, and a heart that becomes broken and a contrite before the Lord in a Philistine prison. How many times does it take us to allow the strength of God to prevail over our fleshly weaknesses? How many times must we be presented with where our weaknesses are, and that we make the choice to trust in the power of God in our lives, or to allow the weaknesses to continue? I imagine those are some of the things that Samson thought about in that prison. Well, Samson had one last moment. In verse 29, Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines, And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. Samson had one last moment standing between the pillars. He had one last moment. One moment to do the will of God and to be empowered and enabled by God. And he allowed it. Perhaps Samson knew, this is my only moment. My moment of repentance. My moment for God to fulfill His purpose in me. For God to wipe away all that I have done and to give me this final victory. And it wasn't just a physical victory where God would work out His purposes as He will in Samson to begin to release the hands of the Philistines from the Israelites. It was this one moment that Samson had. And so with his each hand on a pillar, God granted him the moment. I know this. In a group this size, there may be some who need to return to the Lord. It could be. I don't know if there's any here who need to, but if you do, if you have been fighting the will of God, allow your weaknesses to become strengths by the power of God in you. I don't know if you'll have another moment. I only know that for sure we have this moment. You and I have this moment right now. That's what we got. And if you are one who stands between the pillars, you have this moment. I know you well enough, some of you, to know that there are men and women in this room, in this congregation, who live to help you grow in the Lord from this moment forward. There's nothing they haven't seen or heard. There's nothing that the Lord hasn't seen or heard that He can't hear from you and forgive you for. God's desire for us, God's heart's desire, is for you and I to give everything we have over to Him. It's God's desire for you and I to live in harmony with Him, to walk in fellowship with Him. And that's possible when we give in to His moments. Samson. He bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people. It is representative of what God can do in the life of one person to break down those things that beset us, to allow our weaknesses to cause us to find strength in the Lord and to help others do likewise. If you need help figuring that out, find somebody in this room that will help you do that. I know that they're here. I know that they are. Can I thank you? Can I thank you for the opportunity to study this lesson and to learn from it myself? I tell you what, I gotta tell you, I'm taking some of this home. I've taken some of this to heart myself. And if you've been listening, if you have a heart for the Word and a heart for the Lord, I know that you have too.